Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Welcome back to our newest episode of Millennial Dentist Podcast. I'm very pumped up about tonight, our two guests. I'm very excited about introducing our guests because they're very dear friends of mine. And I'm so excited to have them on the show and talk to them about their journey and everything. So we got Dr. Naif Sinada from right now Houston, Texas, I believe, right?
Yep.
And also Dr. Ivan Chikton. Right,
okay.
I try to say it with even my fingers. You guys, I wish you guys could see
like them.
So he goes by Implant Ninja, which is that's how I know. I was gonna call him Ninja throughout the whole podcast, but he probably want me to call him Ivan. I don't know. What do you prefer?
I think Ivan's okay.
Ivan's cool. Well, I love his nickname. The first time that I got on Instagram and started following Dennis and I saw Implant Ninja, I'm like, this guy's got to be like
that is
Asian nice. Implantologist or something. And then
statue.
And then I saw his work and that's how I actually started. It's funny how I brought that up because that's really, I met both of these fellas and I've been a big, big fan of both of their work on Instagram, following their footstep. You know how, Sully, when I started posting my cases and I thought I was doing great and show cases and then I start seeing these guys and I'm like, man, are you kidding? Like, so, I mean, I'm saying this because it's truly, you guys are so motivational, not just for me, but for a lot of young dentists out there that are getting out of school, getting to see the real world. But I look up to you guys myself because you guys have done so much more than I feel like I have, especially with the residency and everything you're putting in. So let's just, without further ado, let's go ahead and introduce you guys. Go ahead, talk about yourself. Naif, you want to go first?
Sure. We'll save the best for the last, Ivan. dude, thanks for that intro, man. It's true, but isn't it crazy how like social media can like bring people together? Because I think most
so crazy.
Of us here have met through social media. It's nuts. But my name's Naif Sinada. I did dental school in the best dental school in the world. It's in Arizona, Midwestern Dental. And then I did a GPR in New York. And after I did finish my GPR in New York, I finished my PROS residency in Maryland. And right now I'm actually doing a what most people don't even know exists. It's called a maxillofacial prosthetics fellowship. So basically we're doing 24/7 cancer patients. We're doing big rehabilitations like jaws and fibulas and just really cool stuff. So if anybody's interested, I'm always responding to messages on Instagram. So Ivan?
Well, and you forgot to mention, you're also doing that at the best residency around, MD Anderson, right?
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah,
dude, it's going everywhere. Start from Arizona, Maryland, New York, and then come to MD Anderson.
It's because I'm trying to ignore my loans long enough that they'll
be just keep deferring.
Just ignore them for 30 years and go away.
Jeez, Sally's going to be like, yeah, you're good.
Dude, speaking of loans, man, the other day, I think like... it was like last week, I got a notification says, hey, Ivan Chikchon, your loans are going to be directly withdrawn from your account. You're going to have a account withdrawal of $8,500 on the 17th. I'm like, holy shit, did I read that right? Apparently my income-based repayment like expired or something. I got to renew it. So.
Well, yeah, you've been doing those
actually,
big
things. What was the problem when you start killing it? Your income rebased payment is not so good.
So it actually withdrew from my account. And I was like, holy crap. I called my bank right away. I was like, cancel it.
Get it back.
That was scary. I'm Ivan. I'm a prosthodontist out here in Stockton, California. Did my training out at UOP, the best dental school around, right?
Yeah.
Second best dental school.
I'm glad y'all are so love y'all's dental schools as much as y'all do.
Hey, I love UT.
Okay.
UT is the best school in this.
I think all of our schools tell us they're the best dental school. I'm not sure if you guys heard me say
that's a fact.
So you did the training there. Did you do the PROS residency at UOP as well?
No. I went to Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah, I went to the University of Michigan for PROS for 3 years.
Wow.
And moved back last year. And I'm back here in Stockton, started my own practice and just trying to crush it, man. It's kind of a slow start, but I'm getting there.
That's wow. No, I mean, it's not a slow start to me. When I look at what you've done so far and you're 1 year in the practice, I've seen prosthodontists, I mean, that have been practicing for years and they don't know or they have not done near as much as what you have done in the past, just a year alone. So, I mean, that's amazing. So that's...
So I got a question for both of you. So what made y'all want to go into PROS?
PROS is so cool. I think
versus just doing that on your own.
Right. PROS, in dental school, the PROS department had like the coolest toys around, right? So if you had a PROS patient, you got to use the cone beam, you got to do all these crazy treatment planning on in vivo and anatomage and stuff. So that kind of pushed me into the PROS direction. And that's pretty much how I kind of geared towards that route.
So the PROS, so in school, there was a big PROS program. Hey, Naif, I'm sorry, you got, I don't know where you are. Are you in the OR still?
Yeah.
He lost some connection with him. But we were talking about how did you get excited about PROS? Why PROS? Soli asked Ivan. Ivan said that he had a great lot of cool stuff that he saw prior when he was in dental undergrad. And that's kind of made him want to do like PROS because he saw so much opportunity and technology with all the softwares and everything that kind of made him excited. So,
and that is unique about dental experiences because like that was not our experience at UT as far as PROS was.
No, exact opposite of my experience, actually. My dental school had one prosthodontist. I think they don't even have a prosthodontist anymore in dental school. But I have my older brother's a prosthodontist, and he's a maxillofacial prosthodontist. So before starting dental school, that's all I knew. You know what I mean? So going into dental school, that's kind of what I wanted to do, and then started looking into other specialties. And then sort of when I got into GPR is when I really decided I wanted to do PROS. So I actually got a GPR within that first month of my GPR. I applied to PROS programs.
And that GPR was what exactly did you do in the GPR program?
It's intense. I think you guys had Danny Domingue on here.
Yeah.
I think so. He went to the same GPR as I did. It's in Brooklyn, New York. It's in East New York, which I think is now ranked the most dangerous areas in America. But it was brutal. It was a lot of extractions. It was just kind of like a machine clinic. So got to really get our hands dirty there. Did a lot of on-call, a lot of trauma. It sort of just kind of broke the ice for a lot of the dentistry. After doing a couple months of that, I just really felt like, man, there's nothing that can really scare me or, you know.
That's the good thing, though.
Surprise me.
That's a great thing about those programs that you're not going to, if once you do that and finish that, because I look at Danny Domingue and we're speaking of him, is great, one of my mentors, and looking at his cases and his hand skills, I'm like, are you not scared? And knowing from you guys and looking at, and he talks about like he did block graft in his GPR. He done so many crazy stuff that with the like tibia grafting, fibula and things that I was like, are you kidding? Like in that GPR. So it's amazing going through those programs. That's a great thing to learn.
Well, I like it. Totally. So what was made y'all want to do GPR? Because I think that's this is a great conversation because the majority of our listeners are dental students, new graduates who are trying to like, and we both don't have a good perspective on that because we both came out and went straight into practice. And there's a lot of things.
I think you're the majority now.
Well, right. But at the same time, I feel like I was lucky to go with my dad so I've kind of had like a mini residency through him. And then
I got lucky because I got in a corporate where the owner got sick. So I became an owner from day one. So that's how my story.
But most people get screwed on graduating thinking they know all the stuff and we really know nothing. And then it's like just trying to survive and pay loans where I do think there's a really solid place for GPRs and AGDs and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think there is, but I also think there's, That could be the worst year of your life if you go to a bad program. And I hear a lot of people that go to just programs that don't do much, and they're just wasting their year, because no matter what, you're losing money. If you're not in private practice, you're losing money. I mean, in New York, I think it was like a $60,000 stipend a year, which doesn't go anywhere in New York. And then, you know, you're not making private practice money. But thankfully, I went to a program that was heavily in surgery and sort of just really prepared me well for pros. So when I got into pros, I was doing a lot of my own surgeries, and I didn't need to like be babied for the first few steps, you know?
Sure.
Hey, so, Nate, I want to ask you, I don't know if you had the same experience as I did, but in dental school, when I told people I was going to do pros, they asked me, why do you want to do dentures all day?
Yeah, no, true. It's totally true.
It's the same thing with us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. I mean, I was probably even saying that my second year, cause I didn't know any better, like after getting experience, but it's so true. If you don't know a prosthodontist, especially if you don't know a young prosthodontist, you really don't know what's out there. You know what I mean? And I think part of that is our specialty. We have to blame for that, because we could have been on the bandwagon of Cerec. We could have been on the bandwagon of all this digital stuff, but you know, the general practice arena has taken over and sort of taken it as their own, which is not a bad thing. But I think, and there's lots of stories of this, but stories of like Sirona approaching prosthodontists to begin with and saying, hey, here's this really cool digital stuff, but it was 1990 and it was like garbage technology. But right. Because prosthodontists are so hardcore about like microns of accuracy, they just weren't ready to take it on. It's stupid, right?
That's exactly what you, and I just come back, I came back from Coyce, and that's what John Coyce was saying, how prosthodontists, because you know, everybody puts it in a perspective, like how you guys put everything so difficult. Like, totally. Why don't you just make it like that? And that's just, the thing where he said, and he's a prosthodontist, and he's like, and he did perioprost. He's like, you cannot put a bunch of prosthodontists in one room and get like something out of them. It's funny because what he said, but it's just, so tell me how, that's amazing.
But there's definitely a changing of the guard to a degree, because I mean, there's going to be the traditionalist prosthodontist that what we, you know, are accustomed to, but then clearly, I mean, y'all are the future of what the profession, what that specialty is going to be. Right. It's going to be different than what it was, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, I think Ivan's one of those, exactly the people who's breaking that mold. You know what I mean? I think there's a lot of people that are still really traditional and wanting to do everything old school. I think people like Ivan are sort of breaking that mold and trying to like open up, you know, new doors.
Because Ivan, you do all your surgery and everything, right?
I do all my surgery. I don't do some though. I'm still a team player around here. I for zygomatic implants, we got a guy locally that does it, zygomas. For some big sinus lifts, I'll refer to him for big sinus lifts. So I'm still, you know, trying to be a team player. I never really learned the political aspect of running a practice in dental school, right? When I first got here, I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything. I don't need anybody, you know, but I'm learning, you know, how to be a team player with all the specialists. And, you know, everyone knows each other. It's such a small community. It's a big city, but, you know, all the dentists know each other. So I'm learning to work with everybody, and I still refer some cases out, but I'm doing all the implant placements and stuff. I'm doing it myself.
So you're kind of like a surgical prosthodontist, I guess. Is that what it's called?
I don't know. I guess that's like a new thing, right? That wasn't around. That people didn't say that when I was in dental school, and now we're seeing like prosthodontics kind of take the lead. I think because we do a crap ton of treatment planning, and treatment planning is king, right? So I think that's why we're able to, you know, take the case from start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, I also think there's a movement towards that lately, just within the prosthodontic community. I think for dental students listening and for people that aren't in the field. So pros used to be, back in the 90s and 80s, used to be removable pros or fixed pros. So when you went to pros school, you either went to a fixed pros program or a removable pros program. And it wasn't until I think it was like 93 or 94 that they combined them and became, it used to be like a 2-year program and it became 3-year programs. So I think now it's sort of going into that same wave of movement of people being either sort of a surgical pros program and a conventional pros program, just from what I'm hearing from different program directors. But I don't think they're actually actually going out and saying that, but it has to do with sort of the politics of the school and you know, who's in charge, really.
You know, when I was applying to different programs, I would ask them because I knew from the beginning I want to do big cases, and that's that. That's what I want to do. So I would ask them, you know, how many implants do you guys, your residents place each year? And some were kind of open about it and they're been progressive about it. But others that were more traditional, like you're saying, they would say, because it's a requirement to place one, my residents place one. And that's it.
Yikes.
Yeah, so I want to place more.
God, it is. Can you imagine, dude? Oh my God.
It is so like, true. One of the things that I have so much respect for the pros residency, and a lot of people ask me like, hey, if you would go back, I have actually, it's funny, Ren Edwards, one of my, a shout out to him. His grandfather started Affordable Denture, and he's one of the guys that shout, like, he reached out to me. He's like, dude, I'm on fourth year, and I get a lot of students, like, I'm third year, I'm fourth year, I want to do this. Should I do this? But I look at your cases, and you're doing all this. Like, what about, should I go waste or do this? Like, 3 years of either, I don't know, surgery, 4 years surgery, 3 years pros, perio. And I'm like, if there was one thing that I would go back, and I wish I had more time of learning in dental school, would be pros. That's one thing that you really have to sit down and kind of contemplate and look in the foundation of how true dentistry is about. And nothing really gives it to me other than pros.
Well, the problem is it's not flashy. For most dental schools, I mean, I have a sense of use different for you. It's just not flashy. And so you don't, things like occlusion and all that stuff just doesn't get you until you get into private practice and need for it, right, where how it affects
occlusion
you.
Occlusion was the worst, man.
That's what I want to. That's
first class. I hated that.
I hate that too. I hated occlusion. And I'm telling you that right now. And when I got out of the school.
When your implant fails, because it's like,
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
That's when you care.
Right.
You know, exactly. Pros is like a life jacket. It's not sexy at all. But then when you're drowning, you're like, I need.
What is happening? It's kind of like you're looking at what's going on. How do I say? And then, when you talk to somebody, they bring a cast and they ask you like, hey, how would you do this case? And then you start talking to them about how would you present, like the questions you ask, and they look at you, they're like, and maybe that is not the right case for you.
Well, you know the pros cases too, because these are the cases that they've been destroying the previous dentist work and your work, and they just destroy it, right? And so it's clearly something's out of whack.
Right. And that's what I want to give a shout out to a lot of folks to get with these people, especially Ivan and Naif, because they're probably right now the two of the youngest and biggest, and you guys are going to be making a big name for yourself, at least you already have with the book. And we're going to talk about that book also in a minute. But reach out to them. Get more ideas. There is not, your school is not the only school for pros. There are many other schools. There are other people, other mentors. Reach out and talk to these people.
So one point I want to make before I forget, and then I want to ask both of you each a question is, so one thing I've really gathered here that's important for young dentists is either the programs that you go into, whether it's residency or AGDs, make sure you know what you're going into and ask questions so that you know, like, that is the, are you only going to place one implant and that you want to do what Ivan does? Because like, that's a huge deal breaker. And don't just go into the residency because it's a pros residency if they're not, it's not the residency for you. I think that's a big point, to make. So don't waste a year. So I want to hear kind of, okay, so now we've kind of gotten a good background on each of your kind of where we've come from, is where are we going? What is Naif doing? And what are you doing, Ivan? That's like, let's talk about like the next stage, the next level of your kind of trajectory and you're doing currently in practice and kind of where you're wanting to go with it.
Hey, Sully, is it okay if I just touch upon what you just said a second ago?
Yeah, of course, 100%.
Just real quick, because you said make sure to know what you're getting into, right? But at the same time, I would advise people not to take what they're getting into like as set in stone. I think a lot of things are flexible. You just got to ask for it. Like the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? So in my residency, I was like, hey, I want to place as many implants as I possibly can. So I spoke with my program director about it. And I bugged him enough about it that I was able to manipulate my program enough. And I find that's like the case in every single thing that you do in life. Just like push for what you want. And you're more likely than not going to get
love
it.
That. Love it.
Totally. And where millennials are bad about that. We kind of like, for the most part, a lot of times we want things to come to us. We sit around and wait for it. And that's what I've realized. Yeah. It's like, no one's going to freaking just give you a handout and do it. Right. You need to go get it.
He changed the program. So I love that. That's awesome.
But there's some people that no matter where they go, like I'm sure Ivan's like that, no matter what program they go, they're going to get a good training because you're spending the hours afterwards putting in the work and then getting that knowledge. But I totally agree. And I was actually going to piggyback on that too when you said it. When I was interviewing for programs for those people that are interviewing and trying to find specialties, I just straight up asked them like numbers, and I had actual numbers that I wanted to reach. So because you ask somebody, well, how many implants are you placing? And to them, they're like, oh, I was placing a lot, but a lot to them is like maybe five, you know, because the year before they didn't do any. But for me, I was actually asked, like, when you go to these interviews and you go to programs, don't be shy to ask them like actual numbers so that you can compare them to your baselines, you know?
And it's it's like, let's not look at the numbers too. Like I can say, oh, I've done that many numbers or that many implants. It's really looking and learning because the surgical aspect, you can do few and you kind of know, you feel the bone and you can go back to your practice or wherever you go and try that. But it's the foundation of what you learn, which is really truly giving you the hands up to where you can do a lot of harder cases, not the number of implants. I just don't want people, because everybody's like, how many implants? How many? It's not really the number. What works and what doesn't work. It's not the number.
It's so true. But I mean, I guess I use the number implants, but you can ask that when you're going to a GPR and you want to find out how many endos they're doing, how many perio surgeries, if they don't get exposed to any.
How many patients?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
One patient a day. Like, oh, great.
20, 25 patients a day.
Do you get paid for GPR?
Yeah.
I don't know. Some of them, I think, yeah.
Yeah, you pretty much get paid, and it's a PGY system. So depending on what state it is, different states will pay higher salaries.
Cool. So let's go back to Soli's original question about the future and the projected goals. And
Ivan, you go first. Ahead. Tell us about your practice.
All right. So my practice, I'm starting slow, man. 2 days a week. So I started off actually doing like everything, right? Because I'm out of practice. I got a daughter and I'm trying to feed the
beautiful
family, right?
Daughter.
I'm just trying to make bread. But that got a little bit crazy. I was in too many places, spread out too thin. I found that I was doing too many things. Like a prosthodontist can do so many different things that it becomes very, very impractical to get really good at one thing. If you're doing a partial denture, you got a whole setup for that. You're taking impressions for that. You're doing too many things. So I decided to scale back my practice to just implant dentistry. So I'm placing implants, restoring them, dentures, all that stuff that's implant related, I'm doing it. And it's just like a personal thing just to try to get really, really good at one thing. So now I'm 2 days a week doing that. And it's going okay. It's stabilizing. It's kind of, it's not the busiest practice, but, you know, I'm seeing 4-5 patients a day.
So is that, and how is that transition? Because that has to be somewhat terrifying. Like you said, when you've got loans and you have, you know, a daughter and a family and, you know, and you're trying to, you know, because I'm assuming that style of practice, it's so different than like a normal model, you know, like, because you're built off like one patient may bring in enough bread for, you know, 2 weeks, right? Because if it's a big case, but then, you know, it may not. So that's got to be like, man, that's gotta be awesome. Like, who wouldn't want to work 2 days a week and do that kind of thing? But that's gotta be terrifying, right?
So it was so scary. So I was just sweating bullets when I first moved back because I needed to find a job. So what I started doing, in Michigan, I was actually doing some like moonlighting, placing implants. And that worked out pretty nice because it's very high production per day. And then so I said, let's try doing that here. So I reached out to a bunch of different dentists through like my lab network. They found a dentist, a periodontist that needed a prosthodontist. Nice. And so I found a few different places that need implant placers and treatment planners. And so I started doing that like 1 or 2 days a week. One day a week or 2 days a week, or different places have their own setups. And so that actually funded my practice. So my practice started out really, really slow, but I was bringing in some cash from these other places I was placing implants at. And so if it wasn't for that, I would have been really, really broke for a while.
Well, and that's kind of been, that's gotta be good for you to hear, Pimon, because you're, you know, he's kind of in a unique situation where we talk all the time about how he's got this big practice and, you know, he really wants to do similar to what you do. right?
I wish I could do 2 days a week.
Like, but that's the thing. But then at the same time, like, we go back and forth. He's like, should I hire all these hygienists? Should I start doing like, general dentistry? Yeah. And I'm like, dude, I mean, you got a good, you have such a good thing going. And you're so talented. Like, I hate, you know, maybe you don't need to do that. And you do need to devote all your focus. But it's a hard thing.
But then who's, I mean, I got, see, my problem is I built 8 operatories.
And then you're in a crappy situation because you're not a specialist. So like,
right.
Oh, you built out 8 already?
Yeah, built out. Well,
you're they're plumbed for 8, but they're not.
Okay. Well, I mean, it takes like $50,000 to just furnish the rest of them, or 60, 70.
We'll do that.
That's it.
Just fuck.
It's only change.
That's right? Like 10% of your
life. You know, when you've got like a $15,000 month rent over there, what's $50,000 more?
$50,000. Oh, man. No, but it's true. It is. You get to a level where you're like, do I want to do this? Now, it's funny because Ivan, you just came out with a book that we're going to talk about. It's called All on X Handbook. And we going to put all these links and everything to our website so people can kind of go.
Sully's going to put all these links to our website. Maybe I'm going to make him do this one.
I'm so excited because he just told me he sold so many copies. I didn't even think about the numbers. And that's incredible. Crazy. I mean, congratulations.
I was actually in bed last night before I didn't even know we were gonna talk today.
Well, good, because
I was like, I need to get one of those books.
He's gonna hook us up with a promotion for our listeners too. Later.
Oh yeah, he is. Ivan's like, sweet, thanks.
I just kind of came up with.
Okay,
it.
So now the tell us about the book.
So the book actually segues pretty good because I was working at these different practices, right? And my daughter was gonna be delivered in December. My daughter was. Well, before my daughter was born, she was diagnosed with lymphatic malformation on her neck. So they actually didn't know if she was going to be able to breathe on her own when she was born. Wow. And so, I mean, that added a lot of fire under my ass too, right? I needed a stable job. My daughter was going to be born with these complications. I didn't know how we were going to manage it. So when she was born, we actually we spent a month in the hospital. And so I was still working. I was like working like 2 days a week at the periodontist office. But I decided that after she was discharged, I was going to stop working completely and just be at home with her just because I wanted to quarterback her care because the condition she was born with, there's actually not really like a cure for it. There's no definitive way to achieve complete resolution. And in the system, in the hospital system she's at, like everyone's a specialist, right? But I mean, we're seeing like 6 different teams and there's no team that can give us like a treatment plan. I'm a prosthodontist. I'm looking for a treatment plan, right? But there's no like treatment plan in place. And so I was just focused on doing that. So I decided I'm not going to work anymore. I'm staying home. And so while I was staying home, whenever the baby would fall asleep, I would just be kind of missing my work because I really love what I do. And I really wanted to do something with it. And I was seeing everybody's cool Facebook posts. And I was posting some stuff from my residency or something. And I remembered that back in dental school, I was given an acrylic hybrid case, right, to start planning it. But I was a second year and had no clue how to do any of this stuff. And one of the prosthodontists said, hey, just look it up on YouTube. there was no resource on how to do this stuff. I read Mish's book. I read Bedrosian's book, and they're great books. But there's not like a step by step. Here's how you do it, and you're probably going to run into these problems. So I wanted to make something like that, something that would be useful to someone in that situation. So I just started working on it. I reached out to Nafe here, and he was on board with it. So we just gathered a couple folks and put together our work, and Paymon gave us some really great content. It seems like you do a lot of this stuff.
No, I need to do more. I'm excited about edition 2 because, hey, I'm going to take half of that book myself. I didn't know you're serious because I, at first, when you told me about it, I was thinking of, okay, so he's going to do like a chapter, like a blog type of thing. And I was like, all right, here's some cases. And then he went up and then I saw a book and I'm like, wait a minute, this is actually legit. So there are so much more, and I'm glad you brought it up because there's not really a resource for a lot of these hybrid, all-on-4, all-on-egg, all these numbers of fixed prosthodontics. And the way Ivan has looked at it, and he puts, gosh, I don't even know how much. I don't even want to think about the amount of time that
so
takes.
Is the book kind of like a, basically like a, how to do all on whatever and hybrids for dummies. Is that kind of what it is, or is it more advanced? Yeah,
exactly. It says pictures of every single step, pictures of complications, screenshots of the digital workflows.
See, that would be so awesome. I mean, I placed
it's awesome.
I'm like way behind all you people. I just crossed my 100th implant this past week or so. So that was pretty exciting. Yeah.
Dude, that is one of the most frightening landmarks.
I know, right?
Because I remember when I hit 100, I was like, well, shit, we're at like 96% failure. So I got to have like four coming up.
I like, really got to have placed a bunch more than it
like
worked.
These next four are just going to spit out.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So nice. That's my bet. So, I have my first hybrid coming up that's going to be ready to restore in like a month or so. And it's going to be the first. And I watch all his pictures and crap, like, I don't know what's that red wax he's putting on the around the.
That's
deck?
Actually blood.
But I'm sitting here going like, man, I really don't know. Like, I'm actually been hoping my lab guy is going to help me help quarterback it with me. It's like relying on them and like so that is an awesome resource to have. So I'm actually looking forward to picking one up myself.
Dude, it's such an awesome resource. Honestly, I think Ivan's kind of playing it down, but like when he first brought it up to me, I was like. Right away, it just like clicked. I was like, that is genius. Because at the time I was in residency and my program was sort of like a combination between old school and sort of pushing the edge. We didn't do anything digital. We did a lot of fixed stuff, but all of our fixed full arches were PFMs. They were all like real high end stuff. So we weren't getting a lot of people to accept treatment plans. And one of the things I was sort of trying to push the envelope on was to push more of these acrylic hybrids that are metal reinforced so that more of the population can say yes to these treatment plans. And sure enough, of course, majority of people were. So we were doing a lot of these, but then I'm like, same thing. I was like, there's nothing on, like in terms of literature, there's nothing on this. We were exposed to some great like mentors, like Dr. Balshi, who's a sort of a king in this stuff. And we had a lot of people that we were able to sort of ask about this stuff, but that was really it. So as soon as Ivan brought it up, I was like, that is absolute genius. And
how much
of course he
money?
Was able to
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I was saying, of course he was able to like rally up the troops and get a lot of people involved.
Well, yeah. No, I was thinking of how much is it in school to pay for All on Four? For our listeners not knowing All on Four is pretty much a type of fixed prosthetic that you replace all the missing teeth in an arch with implant supported bridge, thinking of going from one side to the other. Now either being the material acrylic denture being and supported with a titanium bar that is CAD/CAM milled and produced, and or now with zirconia monolithic. Back in the day, or you're saying in school days, you were doing a lot of PFM bridges. Now, how much are they in school? Like just as far as people going into getting the cost of it in school? Because right now, typical All on Four, for example, in national average, I'm thinking about $23,000 to $25,000 per arch. And that is $50,000.
Yeah.
And how much is it in school?
I don't know about you, but my school was really no cheaper. The dental school was cheaper, but the grad pros program, typically our fees were comparable to the outside world. We sort of sold it to them just by saying that we have, the latest technology. You got board certified prosthetics behind you, but it really was no cheaper at all. These PFM ones, because there's so much lab work and so much metal involved.
Oh my
dude,
God.
It was like, I think it's like close to, I want to say an arch is maybe like 30,000,
40,000. Wow. Yeah. It's a lot of work, man.
But there's,
you know,
I mean,
how
there's
much they do it in
it.
Europe so much more than in America though, because of labor being so much cheaper.
Right.
I feel like that's why, because I see all my European technicians and they're doing PFMs still every day. And I'm like,
but dude, correct me if I'm wrong, Ivan. I think we are in the infancy of this stuff. This stuff is like really picking up, and hate it or love it, I think people like Clear Choice are actually doing our job for us. They're out there advertising for dentistry. People can't even spell prosthodontist or pronounce it. And then they have people out there in Clear Choice talking about, I went to my prosthodontist and I got my teeth in a day. I mean, I think it's awesome marketing for our field and our industry in general.
Probably. Well, most of my patients that I do full arch reconstructions for, they say, oh yeah, I saw it on the late night TV ad. It was Clear Choice. So that's been a fantastic resource for me too.
Totally.
They're spending they're spending a lot of money, $60,000-$70,000 per practice, and about $12 million production for a year is what they're averaging.
It's crazy. And I mean, it's a really good franchise, I think, too. You know, before I didn't know too much about it, but I think that I think they do really solid work.
They are. And you know what? The funny thing, this is actually not out that much yet, but I don't know if you guys have heard of it or not. The guy, Maloney, Dr. Maloney, who started the Clear Choice, he is now joining up and doing in Denver. He's doing over denture chains, kind of franchising over denture with locator. So they actually, I have a mentor of mine, Dr. Gary Moore, reached out to me a few weeks ago and asked me if I wanted to affiliate with them and start doing over denture with locator. And they have a set price, set everything. And it's like a system like Clear Choice, except for removable, which I don't know if you guys have heard about it, but it's going to come out here soon with the whole over denture world.
I was just saying, I just drove by a place, just drove down the street the other day. I saw a place called Affordable Dentures or something. Affordable Dentures and Implants.
Yeah.
I think that's a new franchise, right? It seems to be pretty.
It is. That's the one I worked at. And they used to be called only Affordable Dentures because they only get dentures. Yeah. But now they have they bought the patent and they are called Affordable Dentures and Implants. So they do the whole implant route and everything.
You know, speaking of when Naif was talking about selling these cases, one thing that really helped me is to when I'm presenting this treatment plan, I present the most expensive option first, like the most fanciest thing, like individual crowns on a framework. And I presented it, I don't know, I shoot out a number like 40, 50 grand per arch or something. And after I treatment plan that, or I provide that option, I scale back and I mentioned my other option, which is more affordable, which is more popular. And, you know, just the contrast of those treatment plans really helps people to not see it as such a big hurdle. That's really helped my treatment plans.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, there's a lot of actual science like in the marketing field behind this. I don't know if you guys can maybe quote about it, but I mean, they've done research of like people going to a theater and then giving them three options, a small, medium or a large popcorn. And then the small one's like $2. And then the medium and large aren't that big of a difference in size, but there's like a dollar difference between them. And people will always pick the middle option because they feel like they're getting the most value. So I think Clear Choice has sort of done the same thing. And a lot of these industries doing the same thing. They'll offer removable and they'll say removable is going to be like $5,000, but you take it out, you put it in a glass, or you can do a really expensive metal acrylic one for $80,000. And they're like, I don't need that. And then you tell them, well, there's a middle called an acrylic hybrid. It's still great, but it's made out of acrylic and it'll be $20,000 cheaper. And 90% of the time, people will always go with that option.
Exactly.
That's like worth the listen right there. That's good right there.
That's marketing.
Cool. That's whole content right there.
Totally. No, yeah. I mean, it's true. And as soon as you realize that, and you can do that with, I mean, and I don't want to treat it like it is selling, but at the end of the day, we have loans to pay and you really do have to get your patients to accept.
I mean, what really I was like to say, like you are selling because you know what, you're selling the value of what you're doing.
Value.
So like, and that's what I feel like if you can't create the value, then you're going to suck at what you
when do. When I'm looking at my patients outside and driving with a Ford F-350, because every year they get 150, then 250, and then 350. And then they come in and you tell them to open your mouth. Well, I could look and they're like, oh, they're looking and they're like the significant other and they're embarrassed because they don't show. So to me, yes, if I'm going to sell this happiness, to me, I feel like I'm selling this happiness because this guy doesn't understand what they're putting money for. A lot of people are like, how are you doing all these cases with this? I was at Affordable Dentures doing $400 denture in one room and I was selling $22,000 for acrylic in the other room because the way you presented it was just the same. One person did not care. He was just happy with the $300 a denture. And the other room, I was getting $22,000 for monolithic zirconia because of the value that you kind of create for the patient and make them understand what their pain is not really, it's worth so much more to them because their significant other, their wife, their husband, their kids, they want to chew, they want to enjoy life so much more. So there's so much more than just because people title selling. And I'm like, it's not really selling. Look at what they're spending on their iPhone bills. And why not make this thing so much more affordable for them to pay and get it.
But so, I mean, I think it's okay to treat it as selling because it is a business at the end of the day. As long as you're not selling unnecessary stuff, it's still selling stuff. And I mean, I learned that day one in my GPR in Brooklyn. And you tell somebody they need, and it was like a largely Medicare. If it wasn't an extraction, if it wasn't covered by their insurance, they weren't doing it. But then you look at them and tell them that their Jordans aren't going to chew their food for them. You know, and it's like, or, and you know, they'll sell, you know, you got to sell your treatment.
Like I want to know, I want to learn more about you, Knife. Like, as far as what is the future now, you'd gone through, I don't even know, like 45 different programs and residencies.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? When are you going to stop and actually start working
this year? Yeah. So this is my last year. So this fellowship is maxillofacial prosthetics. It's a year long, and I'm essentially doing but we're involving everything head and neck. Where I'm at, like Ivan mentioned, I'm at MD Anderson Cancer Center, and we don't have a dental service in the whole hospital. So we are oral surgery, we're pros, we're sort of all the services. So what I'm doing now, typically day to day, like I was talking to Paymon before this about, I had a case in the OR, but we do a lot of cancer resections and reconstruction. So for example, a guy came in today, had his fibula, had a cancer removed from his jaw, basically head and neck surgery, comes in, removes the tumor, cuts their jaw open and removes the tumor. And then plastics will come in and cut their fibula, their leg bone, and put it back in their jaw. But then when it comes to the implants part, we're in charge of all that because they don't want to deal with these little screws. They're like, eh, you know. So all the implant stuff.
So how do they know where to put it? Who guides them?
We all deal with it. So we have a tumor board every week that we sort of talk about all the cases that are there. But that's probably the hardest part, is getting everyone to communicate about where things should go. Because depending on where you go, lots of times pros and the prosthetics and teeth are just aren't, with these cancer patients, they just want to put them back together. They're not really concerned about if their teeth are in the right position. And so here, that's sort of where I've been trying to drive most of this stuff. The case I showed you today, Paymon, was a guided case on mm-hmm. a fibula reconstruction. And that's not very common. Typically, when fibulas are put in, they just kind of slam implants wherever, and they don't really care about where it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
So that's sort of where I've been trying to focus my efforts lately in this residency, or in this fellowship, I mean, is trying to get new stuff out there because nobody's doing it. I'm working with Danny Domingue, for example, on an ear case.
Yeah.
And he had a patient that had their ear cut off.
Yeah, I saw
that. They need ear implants, so he's going in. And I don't know if he can talk to you guys about it, but yeah, we basically did a digital scan of the opposite ear, and then on the computer flipped it backwards and then used that as a guide. Yeah. And then now on the software, and this is all free software, it's out there. We should be able to do this, but just nobody's using it. I think if you're not pushing the boundaries with this stuff, people just won't do it. So he's using the ear that we flipped over as a guide for where the implants should go. And then we're making the prosthesis from there. So I'm looking for jobs. So if anybody out there listening,
dude, I have so many fibulas here in Nashville.
Gosh, screw looking for jobs.
There's so many patients.
There should be probably people working to come work for you. You need to start something, dude.
No, I mean, this is crazy.
Who are you gonna get work for doing that?
Yeah. I mean, he's gonna look at him like, dude, you know how I have manipulated. But no,
Stuff. With this stuff is you sort of have to be in a big area. I can't be like in rural Missouri.
Oh, yeah. You got to be in a big city. I would say Chicago would be cool, and L.A.
Yeah.
I would say Stockton, man. You got to come to Stockton.
Yeah, now we're talking.
And Central Valley.
So you spend like this fellowship is a year long. You spend the first half of the year figuring things out, and then the second half getting recruited by different programs. So I'm looking at a few places. About December, I'll be flying out to a few different hospitals and cancer centers and trying to figure out where. But eventually, I want to start up shop and sort of do my own thing.
I'm so excited.
So
you'll
most likely be affiliated with like a hospital or something like that. Is that how it works?
Even if it's a day a week, I just want to have like hospital privileges and do OR cases. That I just enjoy surgery. I really like doing surgery. And I've sort of, just like Ivan said, I sort of tailored my program, my PROS program, to do a lot of my own surgeries. Nothing against, you know, the other surgical specialties. It's just when these were your own patients and you had your own restorative plan, it was just one more step that you could take it to the next level. And that's, you know, that's just the philosophy that I took.
I totally don't blame you. I think that's part of the reason why both of us as GPs got into it too. I mean, ultimately, when, you know, if your oral surgeon, you know, refuses to do guided stuff, or there, if you, you know, you just kind of like, I mean, it's been so awesome placing my own implants and restoring my own implants, because I realize how much better I can place implants. Like, you realize, like, just, I did restored three this week, and I was like, you know what? Each one of those could have been better in this way. Like, they all worked, they're all great, but like, man, could have done this better, could have done that better. And like, so it's such a, and if you're the only placing the implants all day, never getting to restore them, that's got to be a hard thing to communicate and learn.
Yeah, you place one shitty implant, and then you're like, ooh, yeah. Totally worth it. Yeah.
The implant is not really hard to integrate. It's going to integrate. It's how you're going to come back and make this to patients. So I could really see how at MD Anderson is very difficult, because a lot of people are going through just survival mode. And now they're putting these things just like, dude, just shove it in there. It's going to be fine. He's going to chew. And then you have to go in there and you're going to be like, right, well, that is not mesiobuccal cusp going into the fossa. And he's like, who the fuck cares? Let's put it in there. So I could see you, man, like getting out of there. This is awesome. I love this episode. I feel like this is one of the most enriched as far as getting a lot of content for our young listeners, because I'm trying as much as I can, and I like to get people excited, because dentistry is as fun as it could be right now with our age, with the technology, with the everything we do, with the whole freedom of working 2 days a week for you, for example, Ivan, or go to MD Anderson where you could make hundreds of thousands of dollars already, but yet it's still reaching and learning and putting ears and putting fibulas together, because he's so dedicated to learn. So that's why I'm saying you guys are way, way ahead of the curve. And I look up to you guys every day to learn from you and follow your footsteps, because it's just truly, truly motivational for me.
Hey, thanks, man. No, we appreciate you having us on, actually.
Are you trying to wrap this thing up? I still have more questions.
No. I was just like, I just like this.
He's geeking out over here. Okay, so I have a question. It was kind of directed towards you, but you can jump in too. So how immediate loading these hybrids versus not immediately loading? How many are you doing each way?
I'm immediately loading most of them.
So you are immediately loading most of them. Okay,
cool. What would you say? What percentage would you say, Ivan?
80.
Okay. 80%.
Wow.
I'd say I'm probably like 90. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And uppers as well, or just everything? Uppers.
And are you doing? Are you doing this? Are you doing like? So I guess when you're doing it immediate, and correct. Excuse me if I'm. This is an ignorant question or dumb question, but when you're doing it immediate, are most of these guided all the way through, or how does that work? Because the only way I've seen them is through like a in sequence or a teeth express or something like that, where it's like completely, how are you doing those?
No, so I think Knife and I do it a little bit differently. I don't do them guided all the way through. I haven't refined that workflow enough to find it effective and predictable for me. I can do guided implant placement or guided approximate implant placement, right? I learned doing these freehand, and so I'm pretty comfortable. You know, if there's a ridge, let's put it in the middle of the ridge, you know, and I kind of use the teeth, a clear denture as a reference or something. So I'm pretty comfortable with that. The digital stuff, I'm still working out how I can make it very predictable and not compromise my implant placement. For example, in a couple of my guides, like I planned it a certain way, but then when I did the extraction, part of the buccal plate comes off, and you know, I'm not going to place my implant there anymore. You know, I don't want to, you know, follow the guide so much that I'm placing an implant in a place that I'm not comfortable with. So, no, I'm not doing them guided all the way through. I'll immediately load them. Only reason I wouldn't immediately load them is because if they have high risk factors, the more time I'm spending in private practice, the more I'm realizing that I really have to really be careful, I guess. I'm not just slinging implants everywhere, getting crazy and taking all this liability on. I might have placed a little bit of implants a little bit more freely before, but it's really all about being careful and planning for the long run. I don't want to do anything that's going to compromise a patient's long run prognosis.
Do you have any preference as far as the implant company or any system, or are you thinking aggressive threads for these immediate load cases, or?
Not really, man. As long as I get a good torque, I'm using Zimmer right now. I got hooked up with them, and they're a great company.
We're talking about full arches, right?
Right.
Full arches.
Yeah.
I was using Neos previously, and sometimes I still play some Nobel Active. For posterior exo, I'll place Nobel Active, and I'll mix it up. I'll play some Nobel Active posterior and my Zimmer anterior, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
What about doing
I've been trying, like I said, to push the envelope a lot more and do a lot more of this digital stuff. But I think I've sort of found a happy medium where I always have to have a tooth set up first. And we're talking about single teeth. Okay. You know, we can get away with it. But if you're talking about quadrant dentistry or full arch dentistry, I always work with a setup first, even if it's just like a wax setup or like a teeth and wax. I'll always start with that first.
So can you tell us a little bit about that? So people don't understand. So the teeth setup, wax, who is doing your wax up, for example?
So in my residency, I was doing all of it, because in PROS, you do all your own lab work. But, you know, any lab can do it. Essentially, what we're talking about is we have a full arch restoration that's supported by 4, 6, 8 implants. And the emergence of those implants very often are not parallel or not coming out of the most distal part of it. So lots of times there's obviously a cantilever involved. And where that distal implant is going typically is angled. So think of it as like a four-legged table, but with the angle of those table, the legs of those tables sort of angled to support the tabletop. But before I start, you can sort of put these implants where the bone goes, but lots of times you get screwed with this. And that's sort of what we talk about is I always just treat it like a denture case and get my impressions, get my record base, do a wax rim, get to the teeth stage. And then you can either process the denture and then convert it, or start your planning once you have the teeth in place. And that's sort of been my rule now, is I always will go with the tooth setup. And then once they get a tooth setup, that's when we can start the implant planning, because I can at least look on the computer and see, oh, that's a terrible place for that implant. Or this is, you know, it will actually work out no matter where I put it. So I'll start with the tooth setup first, and then whether I go freehand or whether I go digital, it's been probably like 50-50 at this point.
Sure. Is that just so you see that you have an implant that's not going out, like that's not like not even under the occlusion of the teeth, or like, you know, way palatal,
yeah,
way Buckley? Or is that the main reason you're doing that?
Well, that's one thing, and the book actually talks about this a lot. But that's one thing, is that part I'm not too concerned about, because you can correct whether it's coming out of a tooth or not, because you can correct that with the emergence of your abutment. So you can angle your abutment buccally, lingually, distally, whatever, to avoid the teeth. But the really crucial part about getting the teeth in the right place is you can sort of figure out where your smile line is, for example. And if you know that where your implant's being placed is right at the CJ of number 3, then you don't have enough space. And that transition line from the prosthesis to the gingiva might actually be showing in their smile. So when you have your tooth set up, you can tell yourself, all right, when he smiles or when she smiles, they're showing 2 millimeters of gingiva all the way around. So you know I need to place my implants at least 2 millimeters above the CJs. Those sort of little details are...
There's so many details. And that's a good point, because that's the very, the first and the biggest, most important part about patients coming to you. They don't care how many bone grafts you're going to do. They don't care whose implants you're going to use. They don't care anything, but they're going to care about that smile. And if the patient comes to you and they want fixed, but they're not fixed candidates, then you got to look at them before you even touch them. So like, there are so many pre-planning of these patients, which I love the book, because it talks about the lip line, it talks about transition line, and it talks about a lot of these aesthetics, because we're going in throwing these screws and then let's now figure out how are we going to make this fit. But the patient is not going to even like it after a $50,000 treatment plan. So these are not for everyday cases. And what Naif, I love the way that you said it, because it's just like dentures. You got to learn dentures, as much as you hate dentures. And I hated it. I paid people to do my dentures. Totally. I hated my, like, I never said
that. I'm a prosthodontist and I hate dentures.
And that's why. And when I got out of
dentures,
And I learned so much because now I look at a veneer case in my practice and it's just like a denture to me. And I look at it and it's the same exact thing. And I'm like, totally. That's their smile line. This is what I'm going to go put the teeth. Now let's go back and let's go see the bite. Let's see how much bone we need to remove. And now I need that many implants to support my prosthetic. So there's so much more. And I'm glad you guys are on board because the book has it all step by step written down and it's going to come up. I'm excited because you already started working on the second edition.
Yeah,
Ivan.
You know, it's like Naif said, this is in its infancy and it's progressing really quickly. So there's a lot of different materials, different techniques. I think it's going to move pretty quick. So version two will be awesome.
This is awesome. We need to have an ice cream, party sometimes whenever we meet each other soon here.
Yeah, dude. If by ice cream you mean whiskey, then yeah.
Whiskey and ice cream. We got to hang out. What is the next course
This episode is brought to you by Rebel Yell. Rebel Yell. It's good stuff.
What's up? Tell us some of these courses or some of these people always ask me courses or CEs and conventions. Where do you guys hang out? What's a cool spot to learn this stuff? How do you get motivated?
I like that. Guys, I'm going to ACP in November. Well, I scheduled ACP, but then I saw
ACP?
Nikos is having a full arch symposium. Are you guys going to that?
What's ACP?
American College of Prosthodontics.
Come on, dude. Get me the program.
I'm asking the question that everyone in the freaking world that is listening to is asking the question.
No,
what the hell
kidding.
Is ACP?
He's right. I just learned it actually from Facebook.
Yeah,
I saw it.
Like, I'm going to ACP. If I walk in ACP,
can we go? Okay, I'm not a prosthodontist, but can I go to those or either perio or... Yeah.
There's actually a lot of... Recently, there's been a lot of people because they've been... trying to get more surgical people. They're trying to get more perio stuff. And they've really trying to been pushing this new digital stuff. So there's been a lot more GPs and a lot more surgical people, perio and OS,
come into
these meetings.
And that's where?
Yes, sir. That's going to be in San Francisco in November, but it's somewhere different every year. Are you guys going to the Full Arch Symposium or not? Because I was thinking about maybe going there instead. It seems pretty good.
I went last year to the Full Arch Symposium, and it's amazing. You're going to talk to perio one day. You're going to talk surgery next day and then debate. Like, you got 10 minutes, and they're going to go back and forth at each other. So those are cool because I went to PCOS last year. But this year, I know a couple of good oral surgeons and prosthodontists that are going to be there. So I can't go this year because I'm going to... The AAID, and I cannot take too many days off.
Yeah. Where's the AAID this year?
It's in San Diego. I'll be there in October.
Nice.
And then November, I'm doing this thing with wellness hours, like learning marketing and the wellness hour show in San Diego. But there are so many good courses. So what about you, Naif? Anything cool going on with you as far as courses?
Yeah, I go to ACP. I try to go to ACP every year. I try to go to the Academy of Fixed Prosthodontics. That's in Chicago. AAFP, I think, that's in Chicago in February. And then I haven't been yet, but it's on my goal this year to go to the Dental Town meeting in April.
Dental Town. Solely talk.
Yeah, dude.
Solely just got back from the
I just
Sirona.
Got back from Vegas.
Did
DS
you?
World for.
Oh, what'd you think?
You know, I think it's unbelievable. It's crazy. I mean, I'm a big Sirona person, so you know, it's definitely with Dentsply there, it's gotten a little more corporate. I'll give you that. But I've yet to go to a meeting that is as just insane from entertainment
like a party.
It really is. It's a party, but you know what? It's crazy. I've never been to a meeting where you have so many people so excited about pushing. What's next? Like it really does. Like, you know, and it's cool because you get like a lot of the speaker, like you're looking in the crowd and it's a lot of speakers from other meetings that are just there, you know, and the vibe is really cool. And you know, and they say all they want about Sarek and, you know, the big cult and the community and that stuff, but it's a unique thing that, you know what they're doing is you know is really pushing stuff. So it is a fun meeting, and yes, it ain't no party like a Sirona party. I'll say that.
Like a
hey Solly, so should we get a meal, an in office meal? Is it worth it, or wait for the new iterations to come out? When's the right time to buy?
My thing is there's never a right time, and you know you're always going to be. I mean, we're about to buy another another scanner. We have one scanner. We have 2 million units in the office. We have a 3D printer.
What scanner do you have?
The Omnicam.
Okay. And your dad, when you went in, when you went in with your dad, he didn't have a scanner, right?
No, he did. So that's my dad was he's been through Red Cam, Blue Cam, and then Omnicam. So he's been very, very progressive. So I've been very fortunate in that regard. And then as soon as the zirconia mill came out, we bought that. And then it's just the problem is we're doing so many. And my goal is really to go totally digital for the most part. And so we're doing so many sleep appliances, you know, scanning people for, you know, doing Invisalign on a 3D printer now that we need another scanner. And so we're buying another scanner, but it's just, I don't know. There's never a good time. I think it's incredible. I you know, and it goes back to the same reason you like doing your own, restorations on your implants, whatever. I think that type of technology makes me a better dentist every day, because I always joke with other dentists. I'm like, how many crowns does your lab guy send you back that didn't work? Like, never, right? Like they make it work, and good lab guys make it work in a way that you don't even notice. But the reality is like, it really makes me a better dentist every day. 'Cause I'll be like, oh crap, let's reprep that area. And then, you know, so it's kind of cool. I like it a lot.
Did you do that in your dental school?
No. So we had them. My group was super old school. The people that were in charge of it, I kind of was like, I'm going to do a couple. So I think I did like 5 restorations. Unfortunately, no, I think they're getting better.
It's funny. 'Cause like I haven't been back to dental schools in a while, but I've heard that like at my dental school, for example, people are utilizing it to the point that now they're making every 5th impression you make has to be a conventional one, because people are just using Cerex and E4Ds.
Well, the problem is you go into a practice and you're like, I mean, that was kind of like, you know, I was like, for a while, like it was their day. Like we had one of them was down or something. I was like, shoot. I was like, I don't, if I had to go in there and take a triple tray impression, you want my assistant taking it, not me. Like, because she's going to do a better job than I would. Like, that's just how it is. Like, I'm so used to, you know, being impressionless, right? It's just crazy.
It's so true.
But it's fun. I mean, I love it because it really does. And, you know, trying to like, how creative can we get? I mean, I think it's going to be so cool. And we can, you know, I was talking to there's a really cool lab out of LA called AA Design, and they're really moving kind of with this to a degree. Yeah, Frankie. And so they don't do anything unless it's digitally sent to them. So whether it's any scanner, they'll accept blah, blah, blah. But I was talking to him about basically now they're doing all their own partials. You know, doing partials by with just scans, you know, and I think that, you know, obviously soft tissue and dentures aren't quite there yet, but I think that we're getting there. I mean, and then seeing Danny's stuff with them, I don't know if you've seen their stuff lately on Facebook with them printing freaking dentures and the stuff. I mean,
oh yeah. Yeah.
We did.
It's just so cool.
I just delivered a media denture with the 3D printing Dentica. Have you heard of Dentica?
Dentica.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And it was so beautiful.
How did the gums look?
The gums were, you see, the gums could be, okay, so this was an ethnic, like it could have been a little bit maybe on point. Like if I sent it back to the lab, I said I could do a little bit of staining, but with as far as the function and everything with what I wanted to do, and I have 2 more immediates next week, and I told them do them 3D printing because it's the same price for me. There's only a few labs that do it, but it's worth the price.
Do you remember which lineup you did? Because I know they have like where you can print the whole thing, or you can print just the teeth, have them conventional, or print just the gums.
They want to design them themselves. So I wanted to do it where I could design and do the things, but the lab told me that the way their permit works, and this is Oral Arts in Huntsville, that they get the thing, and there are only few labs that could do this. But they have the printer, and you send them the scan and the cast and then they give you everything, and you just kind of mill it in the office and then stick the teeth with the same material.
Right. No, that's huge. And I know, Payman, you just went to Oral Arts in Huntsville. I think that's huge. Dude, you got to like, if you have been practicing at all, you have to just go and visit your local lab. Dude, I think it will change. It will change your mind.
It changed my mind. Like, I'm talking to Matt Winstead. He's the VP of Oral Arts. about doing more and more of this, because there are more dentists need to know about the other side of dentistry, and that is the lab side. And we send these things and we tell the labs, like, hey, figure it out for me, but
make it happen.
But I want it. And dude, I was there for a day, like half a day. And if I told you the shit I saw from people sending, and I'm like, are you kidding? Like, what the fuck is this guy practicing? Like, what? You got to call the, like, their society. Like, tell them, like, why are you doing this? But no, at the same time, it kind of opens your mind in a different perspective. So I want to work on that with Matt and different projects, because labs, man, it could truly make you a whole lot better dentist knowing what they can do to help you.
I mean, you know, you got Section 179 too, so like you need to go buy things to write off your taxes anyways, right? It's like free.
Sometimes it's hard to find a consistent lab too. A lot of smaller labs are closing. One of the labs here in Stockton that I've been working with, they're closing. They're not as competitive as the bigger labs, and so sometimes I'm getting trouble finding consistent work with some of my Crown and Bridge labs. So I definitely see the value of bringing some of the stuff in-house with mills. If something is not the right shade, it's because you milled it in the wrong shade, you know, not just because you waited in the mail for something.
Yeah. I'll do that on some of my anterior cases that I'll do now. I'll mill out, you know, like two shades, because it's like, well, the block's $20. So,
sure,
you know, instead of my $300 aesthetic crown that I'm paying, I get lab bills now. I had a big anterior case I seated today with an abutment. The lab bill was $2,400. I was just like, son of a gun. You know, it's like, yeah. My lab bill would have been like less than $500 if I had done it. And I don't think I'm to that quality. I'm not that there yet. I think the biggest benefit is single unit implant dentistry. I mean, that where, you know, where I can do a custom abutment and a crown, my lab bill is like, you know, is like $130. Versus, you know, an Atlantis custom abutment's $340.
Yeah.
You know, so there's huge savings on like the single unit implant side and whatnot.
No, but it's true. But you know, like the value of the lab, if you think about it, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. If you like go to these lectures and you see these awesome aesthetic cases, how often they show you like the before, and then they'll show you like sort of what they accomplished and the end result. How often are you actually seeing the crown prep, right? Like they're never showing the crown prep. Right. They're showing the final result. And who's the one doing the final result?
The lab.
Most often it's the lab. So not having somebody who's that caliber behind your back, if you're trying to take your stuff to the next level, is just, it's crazy.
No, I definitely agree. I always said, like, the people are like, oh, great job on that case. I'm like, well, I just prepped teeth. Like, I gave them enough room to stick something on there that looks better than what they had. Like, they are the one that need the credit, right?
Yeah, like, really do.
Dude, y'all, we're going to have to wrap this up because my wife is going to kill me. I got to get home to dinner. This is too much fun. We need to do this again.
Yeah, we got to do this again. I love to.
Yeah.
We got to get back with these guys because this is, again, so inspirational for us and a lot of listeners. So yeah, I'd like to really do this again and get back because we want to know what you guys have done and the story and everything else within the next few months.
Tell us how people can contact you. And Ivan, I need to know, how do I get this book? What's it going to cost me? And anything else y'all want to say before we wrap it up?
So this book, you can get it on implantninja.com. You just go on there, click the link for All on X book, and you can get an ebook or a hard copy. We got our first batch of hard copies going out this week. The ebook is $123.50. The hard copy is like $225-ish. You can get both for $250. And I think we talked about for your listeners, we can give them a break on the price. So we'll maybe we can post that on your Instagram.
Yep, definitely.
That's awesome. That's nothing. $250 for all of the stuff that you put together and all these cases. That's amazing.
I'm getting it. I want a hard copy though, so save me one.
Oh yeah,
hard copy's better for sure.
Send it to Ivan first so he can autograph it, and then
I do. I need that. When he's big and famous, I'm like, I did a podcast with that guy.
Yeah.
and the second podcast, we can update you guys on the version 2.
I love it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I need to have both of you guys on, because Stephanie Zeller and I just started a podcast called Dental Outliers. Yeah. We got to have you guys on, man.
Dude, 100%.
Ivan, Sully, Paymon.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's do it, man. I'm excited about you guys.
Dude, she's freaking killer too. Oh my gosh.
Dude, I don't. Yeah, man. You got to surround yourself with people that don't sleep.
I agree.
I think that's just the key. That's just the key.
Nice, I don't know how you do it with the kid, man. I don't know how you do it with the kid. I'm trying to post something, and then like Olivia starts crying, and I'm like trying to post. She's crying. I throw my phone on the floor.
I don't even know how you guys do it, man. Like, it's incredible. Dude, it's like, how do you do it?
Yeah, Paymon's single. He's over there like,
and I'm already, I'm already crying, trying to keep up with you guys. And I'm like, how are these guys keeping up and doing all this?
You know what? We'll talk about life balance in those conversations on
that's a good episode. That's edition three. We're going to come up with edition three, the life and balance.
How do people get in contact with you?
I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. It's at Dr. Sonata, at Dr. Sonata for all of them. And then the podcast is at Dental Outliers. But I don't know when you guys are going to air this, but by the time you air, we should have a few episodes out. We've recorded a ton of episodes, so we'll start airing them out here soon. So it's at Dr. Sonata on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and on Dental Town. The handle is Knife, K-N-I-F-E. Reach out to me on any of those platforms and I usually respond to all.
I love it.
Awesome.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks,
everybody.
Guys.
Work hard.
We'll talk to you.
We'll talk soon. Take care.
Khodafez.
Khodafez.
Hey, seriously, thank you all so much. It's been a blast.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.